sessions. So if you're listening there, media office, we can begin. My name's Annette Andrews-Lux, and it's nice to have this group here. Yeah, just pull up some more chairs if you need to. I started with a small circle because we had a pretty small group on Wednesday, so it's nice to add more. Was anybody in the room at Wednesday's session? Oh, yes, you were there. Well, I think I'm going to do a little bit of repetition because some of what I have to share is tips to consider when we're doing things with children in terms of ritual and celebration. And the other piece is some resources to stimulate our creativity and our thinking about what we can do. But also, I think even some of the things about the cycle of the year and celebrating the cycle of the year is really good for us as adults as well. It's not an exclusively kid thing. I mean, I have found that the liturgical and seasonal cycle has become, for me, one of my main tools in my spiritual journey because of the return to the themes during the year and how they circle around, they come back, and this Lent, something else is coming up for me. You know, this Advent, I'm working on this. This new year, there's a new thing to begin. This springtime, there's new seeds I'm sowing and invoking to form my life, what I want to grow. So it's a wonderful spiritual tool, particularly as in my case, I've come to increasingly value the creation dimension of my spiritual journey, of our connectedness to the earth and to the cycles of the earth and to the rest of creation. And it's something that I really want to foster in my children. What I think I have to offer that I've been particularly gifted with in the past couple of years by working with some people on South Whidbey Island where I live is trying to take our Christian wheel of the year and interweave it with the earth cycles and to see how deeply connected they are. Many of our Christian rituals have pre-Christian roots in earth-based spiritualities, and some of that those earth connections have survived, but many of them have been cut off, and we don't even know where our rituals and traditions come from. So I'm going to explore some of that. And I wonder if there's any particular questions or issues that you're bringing that I might be able to speak to. If you can name them, you know, I might be able to weave in the pieces that will address those particular concerns or questions. Well, if you think about them, please bring them out, or if I say something that sparks a comment or a thought in you or an experience, please share it, because I know we all have some rich experiences to share. I'd like to go ahead and pass out this handout, and I'm sure there's more copies than we need, so I'll just pass out the copies around there. This is the front side was some of what I went through on Wednesday, but I want to review a little bit of it. And what my goal is in this session is to continue to stimulate a desire in parents particularly, but also people who work with children, to encourage this sense of ritual celebration. And there's different words that, you know, there's festival, some people use, which was kind of the word of the woman whose class I took a couple of years ago, Lucinda Harry. In fact, one of the resources here, she calls it the Festival Guild. To try to encourage this sense of celebration, festivity, doing special things through the year, special actions, songs, food, feasts, to bring a really an ongoing sense of celebration and joy and what is before me now in this moment of the year that to celebrate. And it's to do that in a way that has a little more depth than in our American culture. You know, we have our holidays through the years, but holidays, we forget that it meant holy day. Holidays become a very secular, in most cases, very secular celebrations. And they were holy days, and to bring out some of the holiness, some of the sacred dimension, and lift that up in the holidays that we already celebrate, and perhaps introduce a few more. So in the wheel of the year, the cycle of the year that I'll be looking at, which is on the back side of the page, there'll probably be a few in there that you're unfamiliar with, because they're celebrations that have pretty much been lost or very watered down in American experience. But often in, as we were saying, Latin American and European, and certainly in the Celtic lands, have continued to have life. So we'll look at some of those, and one or the other might be one that appeals to you, that you want to bring in to your life or to your children that you know. And then we'll be looking a little bit at the end at some of the resources that I found that have stimulated my own creative thinking about things to do for myself and for my family, and for other children that we try to gather with in our local area. I think the piece about doing things at home is very, very important to me, because I want my children to have a sense that church or our spiritual life, spirituality, is not something that we get at church on Sunday. What happens on Sunday is supposed to lead us back into the week and renew us and reconnect us, but that our spirituality is so much bigger, and it ideally is something that flows through our daily life and through our walk always. And so by doing things in the home, it's a great way to, first of all, begin to help them appreciate church traditions, because often what happens at church is for adults, and especially the ritual parts, you know, they have Sunday school often, but the real celebrations and the ritual is an adult ritual, and children kind of have to be there for it and often endure it. Unfortunately, I mean, my kids are still really little, so they endure it. And what I try to do is to create some celebrations at home and some ritual actions and use of symbols that are geared for them, that I can also appreciate and my husband can appreciate. But it's like the opposite of what happens at church, because you can gear it for the child. And that's true in gatherings like at Sunday school or other things that we do just with children. You can gear it for them so that you can start to think in a way that what will engage them. And some of the points that are on the front page of this sheet are pieces that are, again, some of you who work with children a lot may be familiar with, but sometimes us as parents who haven't necessarily worked with little kids before, it's a good reminder just to look through things through a child's eyes. So we'll look just a little bit at that in a couple minutes. One of the things we talked about on Wednesday, which I just want to mention again, is because it's a very good starting place in terms of bringing something into the home, is the practice of having a prayer table or an altar in the home. And it can be any space, from a windowsill, the center of your dining room table, a part of a bookshelf, a little box you set up and put a little drape over. It can be any space, and some people like to have it actually in the children's room to have their own little prayer table. But I'm thinking specifically a family space. But it's a way of saying, again, God is not found in church, but God and the Spirit dwell in the midst of us. And so to have a little special place, and if you're like me, who I'm a bit extroverted in my spirituality, in that I love images and symbols and things I can touch, and they carry a lot of memory for me, and they carry a prayerfulness And so to and for many children, the visual dimension is important. So this is just an example of a little bits of our summer altar that we actually didn't get to create because we left on the solstice to come up here, but we'll put it back in our altar. You know, I've started collecting cloths of different colors that carry the different seasonal dimensions. And so we, as we go through the seasons of the year, the colors change and the objects on it change to carry the theme of that time of the year. So this was some things for our summertime feeling with the bright yellow, and this just, I saw this and I just thought, the sun, this is my summer solstice cloth. And you know, it's an opportunity when you create this with children, whether again in the classroom or at home, it's a teaching moment, because you say, oh well, you know, the summer solstice is when the sun is the brightest in the sky. And you can talk about the sun and how it's, you know, we're connected to its life-giving rays, and you could even go on into light, you know, and what does light symbolize for us? And then I had the piece about on your sheets about trying to involve the kids some way, in some concrete way. I just had my kids draw a picture of the sun. I said, "Will you draw a picture of the sun so I can put it on the altar up at Holden?" So this is the 5.5-year-old, you can recognize this as a sun, you know, and this is the 3-year-old who decided he wanted to color his sun in, you know, but, you know, obviously just scribbled on top of it. But this is, so they made this to put up here, and there's so many ways that you can make a little way to involve them, just to make something, because it helps them feel very connected to it. This is just we call this our sun-colored rock that we, I don't even know where we found it, to tell you the truth. I can't remember. But it was just a thing of beauty that we wanted to capture and put in on our summer altar. And these are, at our home, we probably would have had seashells because we live near the beach. But we were here at Holden, so we collected some pine branches and pine cones. And then this is our little, she can be a fairy or an angel, whichever you want. Fairies are very associated with summertime because of the playfulness and playfulness playing out in nature and that we do in summer. For me, again, because of the earth aspect, I like having the different elements. So you can put a candle in her little disher, but I decided to put water also. We aren't allowed to have candles here at Holden. So I have water in her. And again, for us, because we live near the beach, and we, you know, usually spend more time there in summer, the water. And if I was really trying to be symbolic at home, I would get some seawater from the sound, and bring it and put it in her dish. But this is just tap water. I guess I could have gone down to the rushing river, but I wasn't going to risk my life to bring that river water. It's a pretty strong current right now.
Yes, it is.
And then on Monday, some of you may have noticed on the schedule, we celebrated the feast of St. John the Baptist, and I did a class on that on Monday, and so I just added our John the Baptist prayer, since it's still the week of his feast day. So it's a place to have a beautiful little place dedicated to having whatever symbols. You know, this particular altar doesn't have any explicitly religious, except for the prayer to St. John the Baptist, but other times, you know, during Lent, you might just have a plain cross, which then on Easter gets changed to a picture of the risen Christ. And so I had the best time going from Lent to Easter. The night of the Easter vigil, I came home and I totally transformed the altar, so that on Easter morning, they got up and the risen Christ was there, and flowers were there, and then one of the things we did, when I say on the handout that simple craft projects are things they can see and touch, we had during on Good Friday, and again this is at the basic level, but you can advance it to say, how do we begin to get that, have a sense of death and resurrection, and that movement, and how do we teach that so it's not just a head doctrine that they believe, but they begin to see the pattern of death and resurrection in all of life. in the earth, in our lives, in our spiritual journeys, in Christ's life. So we made little, caterpillars, you know, just rolled up some felt and put little, you know, antennae on them. And on a Good Friday, we rolled them into a cocoon, again, just a piece of felt. And they sat there on the altar and all through the Triduum. And on Easter morning when they got up, they had turned into butterflies because I just put little paper tissue wings on the caterpillars and say they were out. And it was just like, it was so exciting for them to say, the caterpillars turned into butterflies. And again, it's just a teaching moment to say, you know, Jesus went into the tomb just like that caterpillar went into the cocoon. And the caterpillar becomes a butterfly, but Jesus becomes a life-giving spirit that's everywhere. But you can use those images in the home to support maybe what they're getting in Sunday school class on Sunday or what they're hearing, and bring it home and reinforce it, and also share it in a way that that's meaningful to you, and that the child can get. Now, older children, even the changing of the cross from a crucifix to an image of the resurrected Christ. And I have one that's from El Salvador, that paint, you know, the bright paint on wood. And that whole, that just that cross could be a whole conversation, because it's the risen Christ up, and behind Christ is the village and the people, and Christ is the Christ figures in the midst of them. Could be a great little, you know, conversation about Spirit of the risen Christ being in all people, all over the world, and all cultures. You know, you could kind of take it at a more advanced level just from that one symbol of that cross. So things that involve the senses and actually involve the children. I say they're a crude way to honor the children by having them do something in the ritual. It's not done to them, but it's something that they do, because at church it's done to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't really get to do much. So if they can be the one to light the candle, or in our house we use a lot of sage, because I've done a lot of work with Native Americans and I've been really taught by them and gifted by them. And it's basically our native incense, you know, instead of using Middle Eastern frankincense. And my little one loves to bless the space with sage. I have a Catholic background, so incense is,
What do you do with the sage?
You light it and it smokes. Oh. And it has a particular fragrance.
So there's no flames?
No, it kind of becomes red. Uh-huh. You know, it smolders, I guess is the right word, or something. Right. And the smoke comes, but it's not a big flame. It's just kind of red hot edges.
Bless the space.
No, it's basically the sweet smoke that's used for blessing. And it's been many, many Native American tribes use sage or cedar to bless a space. It's called smudging. And just like at church, they light the little frankincense thing and use that sometimes. It's the same kind of thing. It's the sweet smoke to bless a space. And it's an ancient symbol of purifying, too. And again, it's just an action that brings a little bit of formality, and like we're entering into a sacred time here, or a sacred space, by doing something that you don't normally do. You know, it could be blessing with water, lighting the candle, gathering around a special space and holding hands and just taking a minute of silence. Makes a little, it begins to form in their mind this idea of entering into ritual space or entering into prayer time. But it's very, very involved, because it's just a small group, you know, holding hands, touching, taking that silence.
You could do some kind of a motion type of thing. Children respond very well to movement.
Yes.
And so any kind of like simple dancing kind of thing into the worship time.
Yes. I have a couple of things that I've done that I want to do something for Lent. And, you know, because they don't really earn their own money yet, that collecting the money is not yet really meaningful to them. Just because it really isn't coming from them, it's coming from my purse, you know, and put it in. I think, because collecting alms, you know, is often a traditional Lenten practice, and they're not quite ready for fasting either. But I wanted to do something that carried us through those 40 days. And so I decided we would do this special prayer every night. We made it most nights. Every night during Lent. And I said, what could be something that would involve us, but that would also be this idea of seeking growth during Lent? So I just made up a simple prayer. We had a bowl of water that we kept there, and every night we would gather and say, with touching the water, may all that I think and all that I say and all that I do be rooted in love. And each person did that. And, you know, all ages, a simple prayer like that, everybody takes it their own level. Shannon, you know, I don't know how much he knew he was saying, but he knew that this was a special action. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they joked around a few times about, like, me first, who's going to go first tonight, you know. But Nathan, who's 5 and a half, he knew what he was saying. And for me to say it, you know, when I, this whole thing about, you know, how much you yell at your kids or how you discipline them. And for me to say every night that everything I do is rooted in love, it was so, and to say it in front of them and with them was so challenging for me as a parent. It's like, boy, I'm saying this.
Now I got to live up to it.
Yeah. But so you could write your own, whatever little prayer was meaningful to you, and there's, you know, there's ideas for some of that, and especially into Dance with God, that book, is it's just a special action that we're going to do during Lent, and we're going to do it together. And it, this one, I really needed something that was very physical, because I do have little ones. For older children, that's a nice dimension, but because I think always when you involve the senses, no matter how old you are, it adds another level of involvement. Besides just the words. How many people have done the Advent wreath at home? That's one I think is fairly common. So the idea is to think of things like that, that you can have at other times of the year, that have some kind of repetition to them.
For Lent, you can have the candles all lit and then gradually put one out each week. Instead of reverse Advent.
And then relight them at Easter.
Them at Easter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of going into the darkness. And, mm-hmm.
And then suddenly mm-hmm. Easter comes back.
Yes. Just another example, if in terms of having a special blessing ceremony, one of the festivals on your handout that a lot of people don't know much about is February 1st, which is Candlemas. And that was a feast day that traditionally in the Catholic Church that you would bless candles, which is why it was called Candle Mass. But it was also a day that they would bless wells, because that day was associated, that was the feast of St. Bridget, who is the protectress of wells. So there's this whole connection with blessing bodies of water and wells. And so since we have a well on our property that we dug, because we share a well with four families, and I decided we were going to bless our well that day. And so we just did this little procession out from the house. We got this big cowbell that we have. And my, you know, Nathan says, I'm the bell ringer, you know. We rang the bell. We walked in this kind of formal procession, you know, to the well. We rang the bell, and then we just cleaned off the wellhead, basically, because, you know, it's just a little cement, you know, stone. But we just cleaned it off, and then we made a circle of stones around it. And then we just sat there for, you know, a couple minutes, and I said, you know, all the water we drink comes up out of here from the earth. And again, I tried to teach that connection. We drink this water. We have to respect it and keep it clean and thank God for it, that we have life-giving water to drink, because so many people around the world don't have fresh, clean, life-giving water to drink. And then we just said a little prayer and, you know, rang the bell, and that was our little Candlemas prayer that, again, for there might be a day that we do that. You do that for food that you eat, you know, and if you have a garden and you're bringing in, you know, the carrots that you harvest or the lettuce, to take a moment to gather around that and give thanks for the food that we're growing. You know, you could even go sprinkle your garden with water and bless it and, you know, ask for it to be fruitful and that you care for it well as stewards of this piece of ground. You know, I'm just thinking of these things. The point is that stepping out of the ordinary flow, stepping out for a minute to enter for a moment or two a kind of sense of sacredness and giving thanks and recognizing that we're part of this whole bigger web of life, blessing of God all around us, and to pause and to name that and recognize that. Because I think that nurtures in children then, oh, this is important. My parents take time to do this. And they start to build that sense of spirituality lives in me. It's not just this boring ritual church I have to go to, you know. And when they go through that stage, even as adolescents, to say, where is a place that's meaningful for you to worship? Or what's a cause for celebration in your life? And go with what's important to them. I was in their class on Wednesday, someone was saying, in terms of like the altar, in a way to involve, you know, young adolescents and older adolescents, is if someone's written a piece at school, was the example, and we want to just bless that gift and allow it to continue to be nurtured in that child, just to take that poem or that story and place it on the altar and light a candle by it and leave it there for a little while, because it's a way of lifting it up and placing it there. It's also a really good place for intentions. If a child's struggling, or a young adolescent struggling with something, is you can put it there. You can put the person's name, you can put a picture, you can put something that symbolizes the struggle that's happening. Maybe someone is having a problem with their sports team or something, you know. Put something up there that's the name of the team or something and say, God, we need to place this here because we're having trouble working together as friends. Maybe there's a, you know, relationship conflict going on or something. Put it there. It's just a tangible way of saying we're holding this in prayer. I actually started a little list of people's names so that, and that's just on the altar. When I say, oh, I hear a story, I say, oh, I'll pray for you, you know. Well, then you forget, you know, because you said that even. So I started writing, just having a place where we write people's names. And once in a while I tell the kids, I remember we're praying for your friend at school whose father died, who lost his father, and we want to remember them because they're going through a hard time right now. And it's on there, and it's just again, it's like stepping it out of the ordinary and just having a place to hold it. So that's probably enough on the altar piece. Any other comments or experiences of using some kind of a sacred space in your home or using an image to help with prayer that anybody wants to share about?
Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't in our home. We live here in Fulton right now. And, I mean, one thing that I think that we as a community do well here is... like I liked what you were saying, and I never even thought about taking this into our home. We do it so much as a community.
But, yes.
Honoring and making spaces sacred that normally wouldn't think of. Like when we got a new dish pit floor, we had a blessing for that, and a new septic system, we had a blessing for that. And I mean, a lot of that stuff involves a little bit of humor. I think the farther you get away from what is typically sacred, the more sort of humor is helpful. Mm-hmm. Like in blessing a septic system can seem, but I mean also it's a serious, like it's an important thing. I really like that, like ordinary things sacred.
Yes. And you know, the whole thing about septic systems, I mean this whole thing about it being safe for the earth, and
right.
You know, the concern that they have here about having it not overload, you know, this piece of earth's capacity, and so that it begins to do damage. Yeah.
And also in that, I mean, the stuff, part of those ceremonies are also blessing people's work that have gone into that.
Yes.
Anyway, that's it, but I'm glad to think about taking that, especially as we leave here.
Yes, and also things that bring it down to the young people. If there's Christiane, who was with us on Wednesday with Vitor, her husband's teaching next door, and she was saying birthdays are a very important time where you can give, not just do the cake and present thing, but how can I bring in this sense of blessing or really honoring that child and making them have their sense of real specialness.
You know, as a child, some churches used to have you put your pennies, if you were 4 years old, you put 4 pennies.
Yes.
Now, nobody does that anymore, but that's not a bad thing to, you know, most churches don't do that, but it's not a bad thing to do. And I know a few years back, I'm thinking, you know, hey, I survived another year, and I give my church a gift on my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it could be a dime a year or a dollar a year or whatever you feel you can do. But,
yeah,
you know, I give my church a gift on my birthday.
Because it carries a sense of gratitude for your life.
Yeah, I've made it through another year. I'm older than any of my sisters, or, you know, I'm older than my husband. I'm older than a lot of people got. So, hey, I made it through another year. But one of the other thing that I was thinking about in terms of ritual things is something my children are old. My older daughter just turned 40, so it's a long time ago. But years ago, we would go to the candlelight service at church on Christmas Eve. And, of course, the kids are all keyed up, and you can get them to sleep is a disaster. And the best thing that I ever did was they would take the candle from the candlelight service home.
Oh.
And we would put that in a candle holder in their bedroom and light it.
Oh.
And if they were noisy, it had to be blown out. They never were noisy. I think I only had to do it once. They would go right to sleep, and then you would go and but that was...
And you know, it's things like that that I think part of the goal is to cultivate a sense of awe and wonder, which, not even cultivate, because it's in the young ones, it's
there.
But it's flaming the fire, I guess.
Yeah.
And then as they get older, keeping it. Because that's the thing, is it like, I'm curious, like, when my 5.5-year-old is 10.5, is he going to be still into this? And how? What are you going to say something?
We, at Advent, well, actually it's not Advent, it's between the wise men and the...
Epiphany?
Well, but the wise men and the rest of the manger scene we keep separate.
Oh, yes. Between the 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah, and not every day, but, you know, the kids love doing this, and our kids are about the same age as yours. They're 4 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
We have a parade around the house with the wise men, and we sing. We can go between our family room, kitchen, and living room, just do a big circle.
Yes.
And one, the first person carries the star, and then the other people have the wise men, and we sing We Three Kings.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Stuff.
I gotta remember that one.
And just make a big circle, and the wise men don't get to the manger until
Epiphany.
Right, until Epiphany.
You know, that's a wonderful example, because part of what has been lost is the 12 days of Christmas.
Right. Yeah.
And seeing it as a season.
Right.
And it disappears the 26th.
That the wise men aren't there. I mean, it always kind of bugs me or whatever when you see a manger scene and the wise men are already there.
Right, which usually happens.
It's a totally different event.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, so for us, that's just something.
And as they get older, you could see how that could you know, pausing at the nativity scene and you know, even saying, what gift can I bring to Christ this year? And when they start to be able to name that for themselves, and you can deepen it, is what I'm saying, is you kind of bring in more sharing around.
Well, the manger scene.
Seeking. What are you seeking?
Right.
What are you seeking right now?
For the kids, it's kind of it's a real focal point during that time of year. They love playing with
the little
characters and stuff too. So.
Well, that's a perfect example of doing an involved action. In fact, I'm going to remember that. I like having the star and the different wise men and processing it in and singing the song.
Well, and the song too. I mean, that's a big, because music is a big thing.
Yes.
I think it's so important for kids, especially that age. They love, you know, anything with music, they'll pay attention to.
And it's, you know, it's not always easy if you don't necessarily, like, have resources for music. Of, you know, finding songs like that, you know, that one's like kind of there. Mm-hmm. But for other celebrations, there's preschool teachers, you know, are great resources. Yes.
For that. You know, you can always make up your own.
You can always, yeah, I do that sometimes.
There's a resource for preschool teachers, and it's they're called piggyback songs. And anybody almost can do a piggyback song. And basically, you just change the words to old tunes.
You like take a tune that you know.
Farmer in the Dell. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
You take a tune that you know, Farmer in the Dell, Mary Had a Little Lamb, whatever. The kids already know the tune, and you change the words. And
you know, for older children,
they can start to do that.
Because even, like, let's say if in a procession kind of thing like that, that maybe one of the child's learning to play the violin or something, or a song, you know, that they could play a little tune as you gather or as you walk, and it's just, you know, it's them helping create the celebration to them, and it's not just all done to them. That seems to be really important as kids grow older, as they begin to take on the roles of doing it. You know, they're reading the scripture story, or they're setting up the candles and lighting it. And then they, if they can name how this event relates at all to their life, I mean, that is a skill. It's like reading scripture and learning how it pertains to your life. It's, you know, that is a lifelong skill. That then you can begin to say, oh, this scripture does have something to say to me. This story does have relevance for my life as a 16-year-old in the 21st century.
Another take on the manger scene is we had a manger that was separate from the baby. And sometimes the baby didn't go into the manger until Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah, you know, so that you've got the scene there and the parents, but the baby doesn't arrive until Christmas.
And actually, even taking that a step further, it's an example of celebrating a season. One of the ideas I got from one of these books is for part of Advent is you actually build the scene. Like the first week, there's just the empty manger. If you have, the stable. And then the next week, the animals come. And the next week, the shepherds come. And then, or Mary and Joseph. And then the baby comes.
And the shepherds.
It's a visual way of unfolding the story. Like the, over at the Triduum, like the caterpillar into the butterfly kind of thing. It's something sits there and changes. And also, the changing scene on your prayer table helps in the journey through the year, as it changes. And I want to get to that cycle.
And there's something about as your children grow older, you recycle. So your son thing, you use it this year, and then next year you use it again, and that helps them understand the repetition of the year.
Yes.
Because that's not easy for.
And that can get, you know, as the child gets older, they could make a really elaborate, like, could you make, you know, a really cool painting of the sun or an image here that we could have on our summer altar? Yeah. You know, I could see a 14-year-old really creating some great thing or some paper mache thing or something.
But just the repetition, that's something that it's hard for children to understand, that, you know, January comes around and then it's January again. And
yes.
You know, and my birthday comes around every year, and they don't quite, you know, they don't quite get that. They'd like their birthday to be every day. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Let me take this comment, and then I want to get into that idea of the cycle a little bit and the movement of the seasons.
I was just going to comment on Marion's talking about gifting the church on your birthday and talking about the seasons of our lives. And I also wanted to add that my daughter's birthday was the 30th of December, but her baptismal day was the 21st of January. So even though she turned 40 last year, she still hears from Mom on the 21st of January because it's the anniversary of her baptismal day.
Yeah.
And she also has had a problem for many years with chemical dependency, and I make a special thing of honoring her on the anniversary of her sobriety to affirm that once more.
Yes. Those are both wonderful examples of remembering anniversaries, special days that come around. Other people I know on anniversaries of deaths, they light a candle and have a picture of that person on the altar for a day or two or a time. And it's something about tapping into this ancient rhythm of remembrance and memorial, and bringing the past into the present again, It's like that day that she quit drinking wasn't just that day, but it's affected her whole life since. The day you were baptized isn't just a day, you know, a day that a one-time thing. It's ideally, you know, something that you carry forward into your whole life. And it, as the wheel turns, you know, it has different levels of meaning for us. So it's a reconnection with this kind of way of thinking that was natural in ancient times, but has, and particularly, I believe, in American society, gotten lost. And I think part of it is this, that people, until very recent times, they lived in this cyclical way of thinking. They were very dependent on the land, they were very close to land, and so the movement of the seasons was natural. And the movement through the church year comes from the movement through the seasons of pre-Christian peoples. And many of our festivals are close to or laid over with the celebrations that happened in pre-Christian Europe. And I want to say a little bit about the word pagan, because it's really gotten a bad rap in Christian circles. And it's become like pagan equals heretic. And I think we need, as part of even a healing process, to say that pagan simply means of the countryside. It was someone who was close to the earth, who celebrated the earth festivals and the pre-Christian traditions that celebrated the gifts of the earth, and this is the time to plant, the time to reap, the time to bless our animals. And they had their deity images associated with that, their gods and goddesses, that basically, as the wheel kept rolling and Christianity came in, it all got overlaid with Christian images. But they all have the same roots. I mean, Easter, I don't know if you bless the Easter Paschal candle and put it into the font and bless the waters with it. I mean, it's a phallic image of life going into the womb of the mother, the god and the goddess uniting. That's where it comes from. And new life and giving thanks for that. And if they took that ancient symbol and they laid a whole other level of meaning on it, the light of Christ coming in the world, bringing out new life. And I think, from my opinion, is that we need to not be afraid of recognizing where it has come from, and that it was the earth-based spiritualities that came before were of that time and were good and had many beautiful elements that have been carried forward. And but as we know in our history, they as the Christian Church became quite institutional and moved in on people, and you will be Christian, the things that went before were demonized and connected with Satan, and people were, you know, tortured and killed for continuing those practices. So there's kind of a sordid history with how we relate to what went before. And particularly in this time where many neo-pagan movements are coming out, where people are refusing that history and are saying these practices are good and they honor the earth and they have, you know, their life celebrating. And often those people are people, you know, that have been alienated from the institutional church.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't do it for them. And so they're trying to find a spirituality that is life-giving for them. And, you know, a lot of their reasons are probably very good reasons. A lot of people have experienced the church that are very, very negative and very narrow-minded. So it's, and I particularly live in a place where there's many people that have left the church and are in these alternative kind of spiritualities. And I always feel like I'm kind of a bridge to say, well, have you ever understood the church this way? Or have you heard this kind of theology and helping make bridges.
Yeah.
And also in the other way, it's like the Christians don't need to be afraid of pagans, kind of like in the sense that they're demonic. because all of our traditions practically come from pre-Christian roots, from different earth-based spiritualities. And that's true of, you know, all over Europe, all over Latin America, and in the Celtic Islands. And that process is very, very normal. If you read scripture, if you study the sequence, the kind of the span of history in the scriptures, in the scriptures themselves, you see this traditions being recycled and reshaped and reformed. The New Testament commenting on the Old Testament, and, you know, taking Isaiah passages and reapplying them now to the Christ. Even within the Old Testament, there's reinterpretations of traditions. The earlier traditions are reinterpreted and are woven in, and you go forward. I think we need to see that as a normal human process of unfolding, and change does not usually happen where you're totally cut off from the past and you start something totally new. And I think that that's what happened in the institutional church in the Middle Ages, is that it's like everything before was labeled bad, and if there was any remnants of it, you would suppress it.
Well, it happened with the Native American people.
Oh, right? That's a perfect
very
example.
Area too, where they were forbidden to speak their own tongue and all sorts of things, and we forgot that much of their reverence for the earth is not only them. If you look in the Old Testament, there's a lot of that.
Oh, yes, there is.
And so, you know, instead of cutting off what
yes.
they knew.
We tried to make them into little white people. I mean, and I know that from being Catholic, it's like, I know I've heard lots of stories of boarding schools and what they went through. And
yeah.
and I think that sort of is coming around to realize,
I think we're realizing we really did a bad thing at that point. And now if we can accept them and integrate,
yes.
add to, overlay on kind of things, but accept what they already have.
Yes.
And they were way ahead of us.
Oh, in lots of ways.
In many ways.
Lots of ways.
I want to say something about the cycle here, and I said that a little bit about what came before, because some of the traditions on this festival cycle of the year are ones that have been lost, that can be brought forward in a new way, I think, and. And one thing that's true of is the cross quarter days and the solstice and the equinox. It's by bringing them into the wheel of the year, it's a very explicit way of connecting with the church cycle and the earth cycle. The other piece of what I have on here is kind of the traditional holidays of U.S. culture, and then. The earth seasonal points, the equinox and the solstice, and then the cross quarter days, which most people probably are not familiar with. One of the things about the traditional days is the invitation to seek how to bring a little bit of spirituality into that secular celebration. A little blessing to honor mom, you know, a thanks to God for the gifts of mom and on Mother's or Father's Day. Halloween is perfect because the tradition of Halloween is All Hallows' Eve. It's way, way back was the time to remember ancestors and those who had died. I mean, that's how we got into the ghost kind of thing. I mean, it's been so trivialized. It was this beautiful, we see that still kept in the Day of the Dead in the Mexican culture, some of you may have heard of. Halloween and All Saints is a time to honor those who've gone before. So it's a beautiful time to bring out relatives that have died and put them on the altar and light candles, maybe tell a story about them, to teach the children to keep that connection with their ancestors alive. But you will know, if you do that, you'll know that you've been doing something that's been happening for centuries at that time of year. And I don't know about you, but that really like fires me up. I love that idea of joining with what has gone before for centuries and centuries. At this time of year, we remember the ancestors. And so to say, you know, I try like to really stay away from the ghost thing because it's like, not, you know, it's like the spirit of those who have died, and then it's kind of trivialized in this, you know, white Casper the Friendly Ghost kind of thing that we do at Halloween. The same with witches. For those that, that the word witch meant wise woman, and it was the wise woman healers. And we just, I was reading a little scripture this morning in the Bible study about the wise woman of Tekoa, and that's what witch meant, was the wise woman, and they were the healers. They were the one with the medicinal gifts, that with the herbal medicines, and they were called wise women. And you know, part of this demonizing is witch became satanic and evil. And I'm sure and people have heard about the whole Inquisition thing and
yeah, all the fairy tales
killing of many, many women.
All the fairy tales didn't help that.
No. Yeah, the crones became. The wise older women became the hag of the fairy tales, which is the, you know, the
evil witch staring her brow,
doing evil things. That's been demonized from the image of the elder wise woman, the crone. There's tons of stuff like that, but
Don't imagine organized religion with a patriarchal thing has anything to do with
it. Oh no, nothing at all. Yeah, it's interesting. Somebody said once that the rise of male doctors in the kind of modern medicine coincides with the squelching of the women healers. You know, it's kind of, and there's no offense, but you know, the men came in and took it over, you know, and took over.
Do we need to leave
the medicine? No, you don't.
It's time for us to go.
You are here now. You are here now at a different point of reference, I hope. I want to say on to let people know what about these cross quarter days is that. We have the equinox and the solstice. People know are the earth points of when, you know, the light and day are the same, and then the summer solstice being the height of the sun and the winter solstice being the low point of the sun. But in between these, we have these, they're called cross quarter days, and they're halfway in between the equinox and the solstice, and they're actually celebrated in many cultures, many European cultures, but they survived for quite a while in the Celtic lands. Maybe part of it was their isolation. And those days are the ones that are marked on your page in italics. And what's interesting in terms of the spirituality or the imagery around these days is the equinox and the solstice that we traditionally see as the beginning of the seasons are height points. You know, the sun is at its highest, the sun is at its lowest, or it's equal. And the Celtic spirituality, which actually kind of mirrors Jewish spirituality, goes, things are celebrated from the dark to the dark. So you may know that Jewish feast days start at sunset one day and go through sunset the next day. Well, that was true in Celtic spirituality also, that you start in the dark. And it really sort of images more real life cycle that starts in the womb in the dark, and then birth happens. So the cross quarter days are the seed points where, for example, in February 1st, Candlemas, that's when the earth begins to change from winter to spring. It's the time of the year that things start stirring, and snow melts in some places, and little crocuses start to begin to come up. Now, obviously, in different hemispheres, this is different. This is definitely a northern hemisphere kind of thing. But it's the things start, and then they reach their height at the spring equinox, and then it goes down. And at Beltane, at May Day, is when summer begins the summer season. It's just a different mindset. But each of those days has all these traditions around them that several of these resources come to. And we just see little glimmers of them that remain. The Feast of Candlemas in the Catholic Church, that I don't know when they stopped doing that, but I would say it's probably a pre-Vatican II thing that I don't ever remember doing it when I was little. May Day, the celebrations around the maypole, dancing around the maypole is a very, very ancient May Day tradition that has layers of symbolism to it, mostly about male and female fertility and life and relationship. August 1st is Lammas, and that is like totally dropped away. But it's a wonderful harvest imagery. It's associated with baking bread and bringing in the harvest from the summer and celebrating that the gifts of the earth. And then November 1st, or Halloween, which is All Saints dimension with the honoring of the ancestors and them beginning to move into the dark time of the year, which doesn't begin at the winter solstice. You know, it's at its height at the winter solstice, the height of darkness, and then you begin to come out. So that's the whole thing about why Christmas was placed at the winter solstice. You know, nobody knows when Jesus was born. They put it here on purpose because there was a festival of light at the height of darkness, and to invoke the sun to return, basically. Mm-hmm. And they put Christmas here because that symbolism was carried forward in Jesus bringing light into the world.
Jesus probably, if the story is true, that the shepherds were out watching their flocks at night, it would not have been.
Yeah, I heard that too.
That we're not out in the wintertime.
But I see it's already time for us to end. But what I want to say is that there are many opportunities in the time of the year between the movement of the earth and the different feast days of the church to begin to do some small little kinds of celebrations with your children and young adolescents. And this, I want to say that I put a little bibliography on there about these books, but you can take a moment to maybe pick up a resource that you really like. This, To Dance with God, really fleshes out the Christian feast days and some really wonderful ideas and ways to stimulate creative ways of celebrating with children. All Year Round has all the Christian feast days, and it throws in several saints' days that they still celebrate, because this is a British resource, but this is an American edition, so they've kind of incorporated some of our culture too. But it has some extra saints feast days in there, which are fun. And then it also does the earth, the solstice and the equinox and the cross quarter days. It has all those on the list, ideas of how to celebrate with children, but basically comes from a pretty Christian perspective. It is Christian perspective. Families, Festival, and Food is also British, and it's really British. Like, you can tell, like, some of the language and stuff that's used. But they have all those feast days, and they're trying to recover and bring forward some of the traditional celebrations. And this one, as the name indicates, really emphasizes the feast, like special foods you can bake at that time of the year, which is a good way to involve kids. You special things you bake at certain times of the year. And again, expanding that from just Christmas cookies to other things that you do at the different other times of the year.
Have you ever done the resurrection cookies?
No, I haven't. Oh,
I did that this year.
The first time. It's like a meringue kind of like thing, but you do it on Easter Vigil. You do it Saturday night, mm-hmm. and there's things with every, you know, with the salt, and the salt is Jesus' tears, and mm-hmm. Anyway, and then you put the oven on 250 and then turn it off and put the cookies in and seal the oven with tape.
Oh, so they sit in there.
Yeah, and they sit in there overnight, and then the next morning they're hollow in the middle.
Oh,
so you break them open and it's
the
empty
tomb. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Now, see, that's a beautiful multi-layered. Yeah. The kids can help.
And there's Bible verses that you
read.
Where
did you get that idea?
A friend.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually, the word of mouth is a great way, like your idea with the procession, I'm going to take home and do. But these resources are kind of, I think, just to continue to stimulate and share resources. This is the one I think I put on there is a whimsical approach, because it's Mrs. Sharp's traditions. But she's bringing forward all these Victorian, of the Victorian age that families used to do. And She's trying to recapture the role, particularly of the woman, I guess it's kind of biased that way, as being the animator of the family in terms of gatherings and celebrations. And so it's, you know, it's coming from the Victorian age, you know, so it's...
But it's
still here.
I think that's very true. Well, I don't want to be too sexist. I don't want to be sexist, but I do think that it's generally true that it is the woman who carries this kind of energy. It is maybe the initiating energy, and then hopefully the spouses join in and support the celebration. But this has a lot of just. This is not explicitly the spiritual feast. This is about families celebrating together in many ways and nurturing family togetherness. And then the last resource is, this would be a resource if you're particularly interested in these pre-Christian traditions and the roots of our celebrations. Lucinda Herring, who has the Festival Guild, her goal is to be a bridge between Christian and earth-based traditions and to have both camps not hate each other and think ill of each other, and trying to establish connections and educate about the origins of things and bring forward some traditions. But it's really in a way to honor and reverence the earth. That's really her gift and focus. And this is a monthly email packet that you can sign up to receive with stories and poems and then teachings, like a little information about May Day and all about that, or all the different seasons. She does it once a month. So there's something about all these different holidays that are on the list that she tries to bring in her ideas of how to celebrate with children, as well as a kind of a list of things to do, ideas. So if you're interested in that, you can browse through that packet, and this card has her email and her address on there if you're interested in writing her and finding out more about that. So we need to close. We're a little bit over time, but I just want to say that the encouragement is just to continue to say ways that we can foster this, we said, this awe and reverence and stepping into those special moments with ritual and symbol and action and joining together in ways that will enrich and expand what happens on Sunday mornings in church, and carry it through there into family life and into classroom life, to really feed that the spiritual life of the child. So as they grow, they really bring that into their whole life and all the aspects. So thank you for coming, and I'm happy to stay around for a few minutes and talk to anybody else. Or you can take one of my cards and email me. We can continue to talk online if you want to. Thank you.
Thank you.